Hey there, thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Angel Ito. Brandis Friedman has the evening off. On the show tonight...
Look, if we finally beat Medicare...
Mounting concerns over age in the race for president. And South Suburban homeowners are facing steep property tax increases. How officials are responding. And how an energy revolution in Bronzeville is paving the way to a sustainable green energy future. And Haitian American groups across Chicago are working to help Haitians both here and abroad. And we kick things off up next by getting down to the age-old question that's been driving the election cycle.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
The Biden administration is in damage control. Governor Jay P. Pritzker, along with other Democratic governors, were at the White House today meeting with the president. Now, it comes amid growing calls for President Joe Biden to step aside following last week's shaky performance in the presidential debate.
Dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare...
Thank you, President Biden.
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either.
What are you talking about? You have the morals of an alley cat.
Now, concerns over the ages of both presidential candidates is nothing new, as it has become a focal point of this election cycle. But what are normal signs of aging, and what could signal more severe cognitive health issues? Joining us now with more is Dr. June McCoy, a professor of geriatric medicine at Northwestern University. Dr. McCoy, thank you so much for joining us. So let's get right into it. So we just saw in that clip there that President Biden has caused a little bit concern over how well that he's aging following last week's debate with former President Trump. His voice was raspy. At times, he seemed to kind of trail off while answering questions. Would you say that debate night was a real cause for concern, or do you think it was just simply his performance?
I think that debate night was simply his performance. I do not see it as a renewed call to remove, a reason to remove the president or to ask him to step down. Mm-hmm. You know, as I watched that debate, I kept thinking, why is the president debating? He seemed ill. Mm-hmm. And later I learned that he had a cold. Mm-hmm. He seemed as if he might have been tired. And those things, single by themselves or together, can make an older adult under these stressful situations appear worse than they really are.
And what about former President Trump? He's only 4 years younger than President Biden, but his performance seemed to be a little bit better. He had a lot more energy.
You know, the problem, again, as I said, I believe the president was ill. And I'm glad I thought about that before I heard that he was, because I wasn't influenced by what was in the media. Mm-hmm. Now let's go to appearances. You know how sometimes you see an older person walking and they might be thin, their hair is a little bit more gray, and we go, oh, what a frail person. But we know that looking at someone doesn't define frailty, doesn't define how they are cognitively in terms of their thinking. And I think, you know, the president, the former president looked strong. He's taller, he's bigger, and he's more gruff. But that doesn't mean that he is better cognitively than the current president is.
So how would you measure what cognitive health looks like?
You know, cognitive health has a lot of different and nuanced things about it. When it comes to measuring cognitive health, I normally want to hear from the person who is being measured. sometimes the person who's being measured doesn't believe there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And then we have to look to bystanders. Mm-hmm. So once I can hear from bystanders what's going on, it's the person repeating sentences. It's the person forgetting common things and forgetting it throughout the whole day and not recalling it later on. Mm-hmm. I also look to see if the person is having different ways of judging things. Judgment has changed. Behavior patterns have changed. I look for those things. Mm-hmm. And then I start thinking, let's sit down and get to doing objective testing. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, remember earlier I said looking at someone doesn't define who they are. Mm-hmm. Let's go to objective testing. And we do something called cognitive evaluation. We use an instrument called the MoCA, the Montreal Cognitive Assessment Test. And that test will give us objective findings, some numbers, as a screening test, though, not as a confirmatory test. And the cutoff is going to be 26 out of 30 being normal. Mm. Anything below that 25, 24 going down, it's considered not normal. But it's only the beginning. Mm. So it makes you say, something might be going on. Let's dig a little deeper. And we go into doing later on a battery of blood tests to look for any deficiencies in certain vitamins like vitamin B, vitamin D, to see if that might be affecting the person's thinking or memory. And then we're going to do additional scanning of the brain, say an MRI or a CT brain. Mm-hmm. And we also test people to make sure they're not depressed, not anxious, because if you're depressed, you won't do well on the test because mm-hmm. you won't be able to focus and pay attention.
I want to ask, because you're mm-hmm. talking about these different types of testing that you look for, but how would you say that you all test for maybe signs of normal aging as opposed to maybe signs of something more serious like dementia?
And that's where the cognitive testing helps, because mm-hmm. now we have got an objective instrument, we have a score, and then we can dig a little deeper in terms of the score. With normal aging, what you see, someone might be slow to recall information. So I remember my grandmother would sometimes come out of her bedroom, and she'd come to the kitchen and stand and look up in the ceiling and go, "Why am I here?" And then as a little girl, I would kind of giggle a little bit. And then grandma would go back into her room and then pop out and go, "I came to get a spoon of sugar," mm-hmm. because she went back into her room and she associated. Mm-hmm. That's normal aging. Mm-hmm. That's where you forget what you remember shortly thereafter because of an association. Mm-hmm. So you might forget the keys, but ultimately you find them. Mm-hmm. You might forget to pay one bill, but when you're forgetting to pay your entire mortgage for a year, that is of concern.
So we've talked a little bit about maybe like aging, dementia, just general signs of getting older. Yes. What do you think about this conversation surrounding their age? Do you think that the public's discourse to President Biden and former President Trump is ageist?
I think it's ageist. I think it's unfortunate. And even before we got to this point in terms of the politics and the most recent debate, we as a country have been grappling with ageism. We've seen it. The American Board of Internal Medicine is even contemplating how to approach it when testing doctors to see how doctors are approaching age. I think ageism is where it starts. It starts with the actual chronological age, and then it goes to the appearance. And so if you're 4 years older than someone and you appear more frail, people start getting worried. So about whether you've got dementia or not.
So I want to ask, because we're running out of time, but I want to try to end this conversation on more of a positive note. What would you say are some positive attributes of aging? What is discourse surrounding this conversation that you're not hearing?
You know, you're not hearing about the wisdom that the older person brings to the table. We have a president who served two administrations as vice president. Then we have a president who was almost concluding another term as president. I think that that person brings wisdom to the table. Mm-hmm. And if you look on the other side, Mr. Trump has lived a long life, so he brings some wisdom to the table. So as it goes to age, wisdom, knowledge, the ability to sit back and reflect and to actually measure things against things from the past. Mm-hmm. I think that's important as a country, the leader of the free world, debates all the things occurring right now. There are major events occurring in the world.
Dr. McCoy, I hate to cut you there, but we are out of time, but a great note to end on.
Lots of wisdom to share.
Yes. Now up next, a small step toward a sustainable future. Stay with us. in Chicago's historic Bronzeville community, a project that could ultimately lead to the transformation of our energy infrastructure is quietly taking shape. Now, it could pave the way to a sustainable green energy future while at the same time making the nation's power infrastructure more resilient to everything from extreme weather to a terrorist attack. Now, it's a collaboration between the Illinois Institute of Technology, the Chicago Housing Authority, and ComEd called the Bronzeville Community Microgrid. And it's charting a path to the future by taking an old idea and updating it for the 21st century.
Basically, the first microgrid was built by Edison in 1881. So microgrid by itself is not a new technology. He had a power plant, he pulled wire to the neighborhood, and it was an isolated system, started turning the lights on the streets and providing electricity to the neighbors, who were primarily rich people who could afford the electricity at the time. What's different now is that we are using the same idea of the microgrid. However, we are using very advanced technologies, renewable energy technologies, very advanced storage technologies. So everything has developed to be, you know, much more efficient, much less costly, and all of that. And that's what makes it different from the days of Edison.
Bronzeville is a very important community to Chicago. It's got a lot of heart. It's got a lot of passion. You know, as represented by this mural, it's got a lot of forward thinkers and innovative thinkers. It makes it the perfect place, the center of the energy transformation, really, in the world.
As a Bronzeville resident and a Bronzeville business owner, no matter what community you live in, you want to live in a modern community. And I think the grid represents state-of-art technology as it relates to power and power failures. So in layman's terms, to me it means when there are power failures, the whole city doesn't have to suffer, and you can deal with these problems in sections.
When we look at our communities that have been disinvested, and when we talk about environmental justice, it's really important that clean energy is something that CHA is always pursuing. We've been working on this project for almost 10 years with the community. We're part of the Better Climate Challenge, where we've committed to reducing our carbon emissions by 50% by 2033. And we're well on track, having reduced it just in 1 year by 5%. But also it has provided opportunities for new jobs. So through this program, we had four residents who went through training on solar installations and so on, and who are now certified in an industry that is only going to grow.
So in the last few years, the CHA has worked with our partners over at ComEd to install solar panels on each of the 16 residential mid-sized buildings here at Dearborn Homes. We typically use across the campus about 6 million kilowatt hours annually. The solar panels are supplementing that energy by about 10%, which means that we're generating about 600,000 kilowatt hours annually through the solar panels that we in turn do not have to buy from ComEd.
I mean, behind this just beautiful mural is what we call the battery energy storage system, which helps provide that resilient power. A microgrid really is a conglomeration of a lot of different smart devices, all controlled by a master controller. And it provides, on any normal day, the microgrid is actually connected to the main grid. But then in the event of a large disturbance, the microgrid would be able to island or disconnect itself from the main grid and use the resources, the generation, the solar, the energy, to still have a continuous power supply. Every single one of the thousands of residents, the police station, the fire station, the schools, and all the small businesses here in Bronzeville would still remain with power.
If you don't have a microgrid, and then if the, let's say the vicinity, the neighborhood is an outage, then you have to turn everything off. Because while the lineman is fixing the grid, you cannot use or turn on your generator or solar because the electron is gonna run into the system. and the lineman is going to get electrocuted.
This allows us to continue to operate when we have storms or inclement weather, where we need to make sure that our businesses are still functioning. You know, the fire, ambulance, you know, all of the things that are necessary to operate within the city of Chicago to service this community to continue. And we appreciate it, you know, having this microgrid right here in Bronzeville.
And ComEd's Dell Player says with the benefits microgrids bring, in the future we could see them in every community. Now, with the next installment of property taxes due in less than a month, many homeowners in the south and southwest suburbs are worrying about where they'll find their money. That's because residents saw steep increases to their bills, some soaring at least 30% when property reassessments shifted more of the tax burden away from commercial properties. But some local leaders are pledging to not raise taxes to ease the impact on community members. Joining us now with more are Mayor Christopher Clark of Harvey and Mayor Joseph Woods of Park Forest. Thank you all both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Mayor Clark, I want to start with you. As we just mentioned, Cook County reassessed properties in the south and southwest suburbs. Would you say that the city was prepared for this steep of a change ahead of reassessments this year?
Absolutely not. We were in a position where I would say virtually none of our residents were prepared. And to have such staggering bills come and 30 days to pay, we saw increases where property values doubled. Some went to like 1.25, 125% over. So that really created some problems, and people don't know what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Cook County Treasurer reported that the suburb Ford Heights is the highest at nearly 30%. Park Forest and Harvey are not far behind at about 24% and 23%. Now, Mayor Woods, would you say that Park Forest used to have the highest tax percentage until now? What's your reaction to this?
Absolutely. So prior to last week, it was approximately 46% tax rate. And so what's happening now in regards to what the second installment would look like is very catastrophic for our community. Mm-hmm. We have been fortunate enough to be a fiscally responsible community, whereas we've gotten a lot of state and federal funding. Without it and without the expertise and the professionalism of our staff, we're not sure what we would have been doing or where we would be, largely because we are a full-service community with fire department, police department. And not only that, but we add to the amenities that lead to our quality of life as we're used to in Park Forest. Mm-hmm. It's a great challenge that we're having because most of our EAV has dropped. You know, it's almost as though 40%. Of our EAV has actually dropped to a point where you would have thought a tornado mm-hmm. just took 40% out of our community, mm-hmm. You know, for both commercial and residential. And so it's a catastrophic situation. We are engaging the assessor's office as well as other levels of government to really come to a solution.
Mayor Clark, I want to go back to you. Can you give us a sense of kind of like your community and residents and who exactly will be impacted by this?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because one of the parts of the treasurer's report was that of the 15 most hard hit communities in the tax bill this season, 13 of them were predominantly black communities. Mm-hmm. Harvey is a predominantly black community. And what I'm trying to figure out is how is there such a disparity that the hardest hit communities just by chance happen to be black? Mm-hmm. We're talking about, there's several questions here. One question is, what do you do when a community cannot pay its tax bill? Mm-hmm. The whole community. Mm-hmm. The city of Harvey has a 52% collection rate already mm-hmm. without these new astronomical bills. Mm-hmm. So imagine what the collection rate is going to be with the bills in place. People are not prepared, they're not ready. The county needs to push back the date of payment. They need to get rid of the percentage of fines, fees, and penalties. And the state and the county needs to work together to try to fix this thing. No matter how much we put together the numbers, at the end of the day, if the people can't pay it, it doesn't matter.
Now tell me about Hold the Tax, that initiative, and how you are hoping that is going to lower the tax levy.
Well, one of the things that we're trying to do with HoldTheTax.com is to get all of our taxing bodies within our tax district to commit to a 0% increase mm-hmm. on the tax levy. Mm-hmm. First of all, what that does for the next tax bill is it gives the taxpayer an idea of what their next bill will be like so they can plan. In the meantime, it buys us a little time to have that conversation with our state and county leaders to try to figure out how we can fix this problem. But what most people need to understand is that it's not just Harvey. It is Park Forest and Dixmoor and Phoenix and Riverdale and Dalton and Calumet City and so many other communities that are facing this challenge that we all need to work together to try to fix it.
Now, Mayor Woods, can you tell us what exactly our property taxes are going towards? Do you foresee cuts if you don't increase the taxes?
Well, let me put it this way. Park Forest, for the last 4 out of 7 years, have had a 0% tax levy. We did not and have not put that burden on residents to say that. Again, I mentioned earlier how we've been able to kind of offset having a 0% tax increase with actually getting state funds and lobbying for those funds that really kept us at a pace of, you know, business as usual in the sense that not the negative connotation of business as usual, but we've been able to be business as usual from a good standpoint. We've been able to not have to decrease our services to our residents. And so we're really at a point where we just have to really change the system in Cook County. Park Forest, as you may know, is both Will and Cook County. Will County does not have that same problem, if you will, that Cook County has. And that's why we're engaging all those levels of government. We, for the last 3 years, have really been engaging with the assessor's office to, number one, really make sure that they see what we see, to see the inconsistency, to see the lack of uniformity. And so if we work towards that, I think it'll be better not only for Park Forest, but for the entire Southland region.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're running out of time, but I want to end with a question that I'd like both of you to answer. What do you think needs to happen to ensure more stability for homeowners?
In the immediate, what needs to happen is there needs to be a reassessment. Mm-hmm. Because of the disparity, we know that the reassessment is necessary on all levels. And then we need for our governor to actually step in and take the bull by the horns and say, hey, look, I'm going to do the leadership. That's what I was trying to do in Harvey. Mm-hmm. The leadership to make sure that we represent our people fairly from a tax perspective.
All right.
One thing that we know for sure in the Southland is that the common denominator is the system in the Cook County side. However, we're not monolithic when it comes to the different characteristics and the functionings of respective municipalities. What we need to do is first to, again, reassess, pardon the pun, reassess where we are as a community for Park Forest residents, Southland residents. We want to make sure that we are generally fighting on behalf of the residents.
Mayor Clark and Mayor Woods, thank you so much for joining us. Up next, local efforts to aid refugees. But first, a look at the weather. Haiti is in the middle of an ongoing humanitarian crisis. Amid political instability and gang violence, more than 300,000 Haitians have been displaced in the last year. Now, in response, the Coalition of Haitian American Organizations in the Chicagoland area has jumped into action to do what it can here.
I always seen the image of Haitians in Haiti as being destitute, being that we have all these problems, or we're living in poverty, and we have all these issues. And those are true, but we also have to show that we are a community. We're not just what's shown in the media. We're more than this. We're doctors, we're lawyers, we're physicists, we're physicians, we're pharmacists, we're, you know, we're business owners. There's so many things we can offer, and this Heritage Month is going to show now the other side of us coming to this country and showing, hey, we're not just here for handouts. We're here to build and make our community and this country better, because at the end of the day, we want to stand by the motto, give us your tired, your hungry, your poor. Yes, they come here and we want to make sure we support them. But we also want to make sure that we are supporting the notions to help Haiti, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that people who are a part of our community is supported, that these gangs are not accepted, not only in Chicago, but they're not accepted anywhere in the world.
We've had to fight for every resource that we've been able to give and get for the Haitian community here. And we know that there is a brighter future for Haiti. Haiti is one of the most beautiful islands in the Caribbean, and it will return to exactly what it was supposed to be.
Now, just last week, the Biden administration gave temporary legal protected status to over 300,000 Haitian refugees living in the U.S. And that's our show for tonight. On a programming note, we're off tomorrow for the holiday, but we'll be right back here on Friday for a week in review at 5:37 and a special new time at 10 o'clock. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight Black Voices, I'm Angelito. I hope you have a great holiday and throw something on the grill. Have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm dedicated to preserving the dignity and rights of all individuals.